Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
freaky darlings, and welcome to the Late Night Poets After Midnight show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, you are on the right night, but please check out our other After Midnight shows. Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babbler as they teach you the fine art of being part sinner, part saint. Mondays are split between The Hearts of L&P with Victoria and A New Chapter in Black Lace Diaries with Mr. M and Mistress Frost. These shows are designed to color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope of expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. Now, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. How's it going?
All righty. What's doing?
I'm doing awesome. I'm looking forward to tonight's show. We got a great lineup of poetry, you know, hanging out with you, some other cool poets, and, you know, it's been a good day, and it's going to be a good night, so I can just feel it. So, and how about you?
How about what?
Oh, did I already ask you? I think I already asked you how you were, didn't I?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. Yep. But tonight's topic is we have poetry inspired by quotes by Niccolo Machiavelli, if I'm pronouncing that right. Probably slightly off, but Machiavelli. I think that's it.
It's close enough. Machiavelli.
Ah, okay. Well, at least there's one of us here who knows how to pronounce that name. So, very cool. And, yeah, he definitely was an intriguing figure. I don't know if I'd agree with everything he has to say, but that's okay because I don't put prompts up because I agree with everything someone has to say. I put them up because I think they'll inspire just really powerful rites. And you know what? I believe that's what this particular topic did.
And you see what Weaver dropped in the room? There's only 10 minutes of the show left.
What's that?
Weaver says there's only 10 minutes of the show left.
Oh, okay. Well, I will fix that. Here we go. You go ahead and chit-chat while I do the fixing, okay?
Oh, sure. Why not? Well, yes.
Well, here, I'll go ahead and bring Lauren on, and I'll bring Weaver on, and they can chit-chat with you. And it won't take me long to fix this. So welcome, Lawrence and Weaver. Glad you could be here.
Rex, are you henpecked?
No, henpecked. Nah.
All right, you sounded a bit peevish. A little peevish.
Down to what?
All
hey, Weaver.
Hello, Weaver. Okay.
Are you there, Weaver? Well, you know, the odd thing with Weaver is I actually have her on twice. So I don't know which one is the actual Weaver and which one's her doppelganger. Maybe neither of them are. But here.
Try the other one.
All right. Well, I have them both unmuted because I just wasn't sure. Let me try something. I'm going to mute one. And I'm going to say, mute, and hello, Weaver. If you're on mute, take yourself off and speak.
Cricket. I hear cricket.
I hear cricket, too. Let's try this. Are you there, Weaver? All right, you know what I'm going to do? I'll just leave both unmuted, and maybe she'll end up having to hang up and cool back.
Maybe she took a walk. Maybe she didn't pick her up. What was that,
what
Laurel?
What is that?
I said, then you'll have three.
I know. Yeah.
Nothing like replicant.
Well,
hey, nice word
right.
choice.
So, okay, Weaver, we can't hear you. I'm going to hang up on you, and then I want you to go ahead and call back if you can hear us. So here we go. Hang up. All right. And there we go. So hopefully she'll call back. But, yeah, Rex, we were just talking about what great taste you have in intro music.
Well,
I can
come up with a few things here and there to make for shows.
Definitely. And the intro song for this show is just one of my all-time favorites out of all the shows. But yeah, you definitely also are able to really connect with the theme of a show. So that's always cool.
This one, 52 years old.
How many years old?
52.
Okay. Well, oh, that song is 52 years old.
Yep, 1970.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yep. Definitely a good classic. But, I don't know. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about Machiavelli, or shall we move on forth?
Well, no, you just picked on the quotes. You didn't dip into the thought of who Machiavelli was, so that doesn't really matter, although he was he came at that time right after the Medici's lost their power in Italy, so it was a nasty time all the way around.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I don't think for any show necessarily that the who of somebody was really matters as far as inspiration, but I just find that a lot of times delving into the historical figure, the poet, the artist themselves, makes for interesting conversation. That's the only reason I bring it up. So, all right. And Weaver is back with her evil laugh.
Weaver's back with her evil laugh. Try it again.
Welcome. Hi, Weaver. Glad you could join us. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and get things started. The first poem we have up is Rain Man or Renaissance Man by Eric Svensson. And we have a recording for that. So I'm going to go ahead and push play.
Rain Man or Renaissance Man. Bright spark, boogie-woogie, Renaissance Man. Solar flare, intellect, igniter, tyrants, despots, and dictators to this day. Smooth like bespoke David of his hometown, pedestal placed, his teachings crisscrossed, bisect pedestrian political science, alchemy of a Florentine protege, diplomat, author, philosopher, and historian, Machiavellian master researcher, Renaissance conjurer of epic proportions. The art of war, once again, global focus point. The winner takes it all. Don't even bother feeding the loser cake. Law of the jungle supersedes all philosophy. Survival of the fittest. Dog eat dog. A room with a view on a hill. Below the dome of Santa Maria del Fiore glows fiery gold. Summerson, flint sparks of pink marble of this vast Gothic structure. Splendor of an era now inconceivable, fender bends the mind. Ribald Renaissance, bright sparked splendor, still buckles concrete blandness. Machiavellian mastery, the art of war. Who said, I'm my brother's keeper? Illustrious tapestries depict the victor and vanquished. White House feast of noble men and women. Bacchanalian appetites pardoned by prescribed Hail Marys. Confession's balm might just heal such appetites. Don't know why, but as I studied David in the Accademia Gallery in Florence, the word antithesis came to mind. What Machiavelli proposes, Michelangelo's masterpiece disposes of. Pedestal placed, this David is not a warmonger. Diabolical despots, dictators and tyrants don't interest him. Wasn't he the guy that exorcised Saul's demons by playing gentle harp music? Pied Piper, O Pied Piper, play us the Aquarian Age tune. Combine critical mass heart slingshots, smite all the Machiavellian Goliaths of this world. End poems.
Wonderful read, Eric. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. Pam, did you get a Weaver in there? I saw some things going on. Okay.
Yeah, certainly. She may be off trying to find out what the problem is right now. This is a poem of the antithesis of Machiavelli. Now, Machiavelli, his world dictates the winner takes it all. Don't even bother feeding the loser cake. Law of the jungle supersedes all philosophy. Survival of the fittest, dog eat dog. But on the other hand, Michelangelo's masterpiece disposes of pedestal place. This David is not a warmonger. Diabolical despots, dictators, and tyrants don't interest him. And I said, yes, he is the antithesis of the Machiavellian figure, beauty for beauty's sake, art for art's sake. And as Eric, so, and I didn't realize, maybe I knew, but I didn't ever really realize that David sung Saul's Demons that way. I mean, I think I may have heard of it, but I didn't really realize it. And that I thought was great because you can see it in the statue's face almost, the peace, the blessingness of it. It's a totally skillful piece. Smites all the Machiavellian Goliaths of this world. Gotta like it.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Laurent. All right, Pam, how about you? Are you mutating?
I am mutating. Why was I doing? Oh, yes, because it was a SoundCloud. That's why, and I wanted. Okay, but yes, a strong right. I like the way that he plays with words. I like the way that he sticks to the metaphor of talking about David and his accomplishments, such as, you know, exercising Saul's demons by playing the harp, facing Goliath. I even like the title in this, Rain Man or Renaissance Man. You know, Rain Man, of course, makes me think of the movie Rain Man and how he really only had that one gift, which was counting numbers, mathematics. And so, you know, it's that idea of was, you know, to me it can ask that question of, you know, was Machiavelli, you know, only focused on one thing or were his gifts, you know, varied? I like how this kind of pays tribute, delves deep into the different aspects of Machiavelli. I like that he brings up his book, The Art of War. Illustrious tapestry depict victor and vanquished, White House feast of noble men and women, Machiavellian appetites pardoned by prescribed Hail Marys, confession balm might just heal such appetites. You know, to me, I like those stanzas. That stanza, those lines particularly stand out to me in the way that too often we use religious beliefs and ceremony to cover up the hurt that we get due to other people. I think these are very thought-provoking lines. I like how he brings us back in history and then brings us forward in history, because war is a part of each time period, and brings us even to his own contemplation of the statue of David and how David, while a warrior, was also a peacekeeper, you know, a peaceful man. You know, he didn't want to fight. He fought when he had to, but he much preferred the gentle way, the way of the harp. So I thought this was beautifully written and very well done.
Well said. And did we get Weaver back in?
No, I think she's just, I don't know why she's having problems tonight, but she either, yeah, I know we can't hear her, and I'm not sure she can hear us, but yeah, for some
gotta
reason.
Gotta be in my files. All right,
yeah.
Great comments, you two. I thought the Rain Man and Renaissance Man was a nice title, too. He hits on a whole lot of thought. That opening line, bright spark, boogie, woogie, Renaissance Man. Great way to open up, kind of hints on a little bit of playfulness. He hits on also the alchemy of a Florentine protege, which is nice because alchemy was quite the practice back in that day. And that third stanza, the woman takes it all. Don't even bother feeding the loser cake. Lord, the jungle supersedes all philosophies. Survival, fittest, dog eat dog. Quite the note of thought to some of his philosophies and ideas that the winner does take all, and he need not be persecuted or thought bad of for any illicit acts he did in order to take care of business. So that walks into that angle. Now, the art of war was a nice touch, too, going back to Sun Tzu back in, I think, 500 B.C., so great touch there, bringing in David, too. I think, I don't know why, but as I studied David in the Academia Gallery of Florence, the word antithesis came to mind. What Machiavelli proposes, Michelangelo's masterpiece disposes of, pedestal place, this David is not a warmonger. A nice touch of thought there. And I too like that last line, last night, smites all the Machiavellian Goliaths of this world. It seems to go from a B.C. thought into a Renaissance thought into kind of, again, that thought with the Aquarian Age, going back to the mid to late 60s when that thought was running rampant across the world, is the Age of Aquarius, the new dawning. To that which is enlightenment. Well,
hey, Rick.
Yes.
What do you suppose makes Machiavelli such an appealing or a notorious figure? Because he is appealing.
Well, I think it's because he walked on many levels, not just being the historian, the philosopher, plus a huge intellect. He didn't think moral terms. When it came to war, was such a thought because of what war produced to begin with, which means that death, destruction, and taking that which you wanted as opposed to what the people of that particular arena wanted.
On a much smaller level as opposed to the grander levels of, you know, war between states.
I think he was
almost interpersonal. It was almost family to family. It was, you know.
Yeah, he did live in an era where things were kind of congealed into almost a singularity. The Medicis were ruling back then when he first came out afterwards, but they had already gone, but they were pretty ruthless, and they were the ruling class. They were the popes, the bishops, and everything else in between. But that age kind of, I think that age with the Renaissance, it kind of hit on that new thought of imagination being sparked past the thought of the church has to rule everything. So,
yes,
maybe the immorality in the church is what got him to the thought of moving past that and into, because politics is always an evil, dirty game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Pam, I got no doubt you can handle us.
I know, but it's always nice to have backup.
Well, what's his name? The younger, the daughter, Medici's daughter. She liked keeping poison potions in her ring, so she could deliver them into the wine flasks of her lovers and consorts and everything else. So, yeah, nasty people.
You'd think people would have said after a while, "Beware the ring."
Yeah.
Here comes the ring. Somebody else is going to die.
All right. Where would you like to go next?
All right. Up next, we have Wild Was the Cougar by Poetic Creations. And Lawrence, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, I will, Pam. Wild was the cougar. She was full of darkness, but this only made the scarcity of light within brighter by tenfold. I held the enemy in arms and kissed her lips, swooning a glint of light, blind to the danger, not aware of the predator who fantasized on the thought of my death and the screaming. That came with the dying of a light. It was my light that died when love proved be nothing but hatred. Hatred she did love. Oh, how she loved to hate and lived only to kill. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. All right, Pam, what you got on PC's Wild with the Cougar?
Well, before I comment on this, I would like to welcome Gray to the show. So welcome, Gray. Glad you could join us.
Thank you. Hi, Pam. Hi, Rex. Hi, Lauren.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Excellent.
Great to hear.
I really like this write. You know, there's something to me, and you know, I don't know what it is, but it's got that feeling of, you know, a strong woman. But I guess I don't know if strong's the right word, because she's just so very dangerous, very evil. You know, I feel like it's about that being attracted to somebody who you know isn't good for you, and yet you can't help that attraction. I held the enemy in arms and kissed her lips, swooning a glint of light, blind to the danger, not aware of the predator who fantasized on the thought of my death and the screaming. You know, and I guess another thought I get of this is I'm reading it and pondering it, because sometimes I talk and think at the same time, and that doesn't always go well. But it makes me think of lust, but it also makes me think of addiction. And the way, it doesn't have to necessarily be a person, but a substance, or, you know, that you can be addicted to, and that destroys you from the inside, and yet you can't help but love and hate it at the same time. So just a powerful write and very well done.
Wow, thank you, Pam. Gray, how about you?
You know, it's a powerful poem. It really hits on the dark, the lust for darkness. You know, we have this need to pry into the dark and see what's there until it rips us apart and leaves us in pieces. And I think that's kind of a human nature thing. But no, the poem is fantastic throughout.
Excellent. Thank you, Gray. All right, Laurent, you got to read it. How about you? But you got on mute first.
You're right about that. I'm sorry. Wild was the cougar. Cougar is my favorite kind of woman. She, there is within them enough experience and enough age to either learn to hate a great deal or to learn to love a great deal. And in this case, it seems that it was the hatred that she did love. Very powerful for such a small piece.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that. I thought that coddling this and running the language this way was a great way to hit on that Machiavellian sort of winner-take-all, so to speak. And it does hit on that notion, even though he's smitten in that angle. But the thought with the language he hits on, it goes within that note of misandry. She's willing to gobble up, destroy, and spit out the other side any and all men that stand in her way. Great piece. All right, Pam. Coming back to you.
All right. Well, before we move on, I'd like to welcome Weaver to the show. So welcome, Weaver, as you could hear me.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Yes.
They finally let you in.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi, Weaver.
How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully, thank you. A little bit frustrated, but here I am. I don't know. It's me and technology. I have this vibe. I touch it, it stops. Okay, we're back.
Well, we got you here now, so welcome.
Thank you.
All
right. Did you by any chance get to hear that last poem?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't. I wasn't getting anything at all. Okay.
Just
well,
I'll
get the next one.
Excellent.
Thank you.
All right, Pam, where are we going?
All right. Up next, we have The Prince by Asama Chiba. And Gray, would you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. All states and governments which men have ever ruled have been either a republic or princedoms. Of a republic-free state, we shall not speak. Princedoms are hereditary possessions of the prince. If men think to better their conditions or change their master, they will soon find out that they are worse off than before. So they subject to the power of the ruler, follow into the footsteps of their prince as he shapes things as he pleases. Where the end justifies the means. It is better to be loved. Is it better to be loved or to be feared? End poem.
Great read, Gray. Thank you very much. And Weaver, why don't we start with you, please?
Okay. Yes, this is a very interesting poem. And I totally agree with everything, except how could you, better to be loved or to be feared, I would think. Well, if you want to rule, I suppose to be feared would be the thing to go, wouldn't it, really? But I think there's an awful lot in this poem that tells an awful lot about how things used to be, you know, when people did have that kind of power, where they could make a difference and change people's lives just because they wanted to. So I'm awful glad we don't actually have that in this country anymore. But a very interesting poem. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Weaver. Laurent, how about you?
Well, unfortunately, princedoms still exist, and their princedoms are hereditary and also arbitrary, sometimes in their cruelty. And if you have to answer the question at the end, I guess I would answer, it's probably more certain to be, you can be more certain of being hatred than you can of being loved, because I think love can be phony. It can be pretended. But, you know, if you do the right things, people are going to fear you. You know you're feared. And it's better to be feared than loved if you want to succeed along Machiavellian lines. Otherwise, I'd much rather be loved.
Nicely said. Thank you, Rob. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I liked this one a lot. It was really nice of Asama to share this with us because it's not actually in the contest. She put it on the contest wall and shared it with us. And, you know, I thought this was definitely a thought-provoking write. And What really stood out to me was two things. First of all, the question at the end, which was based after a quote by Niccolo Machiavelli, which is, it's better to be feared than to be loved. But the extended version of the quote is, if you have to be, and I'm paraphrasing here, but if you have to be one or the other, it's better to be feared than to be loved. And I like that she put that into a question, putting up to us the idea of, you know, what is it truly better to be? You know, let's see, that stood out to me. Another part that really stood out to me is, if men think to do to better their conditions or change their master, they will soon find out that they are worse off than before. I thought that was a very, intriguing line of thought in the idea that too often we think we can improve things when all along our ideas were no better. And I did comment on that. I said, you know, a great write on, you know, the idea of trying to change a system and ending up far worse. And one thing she said is that is exactly what happens in the Middle East, until our recent history and politicians in the world are all students of Machiavelli. So I really appreciated her thoughtful answer that she gave to my comment. But yeah, I really like how this delves into history and into politics and the idea of, you know, what actually does change the world. So, excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Gray, how about you?
You know, the old saying of, you know, the devil you know against the devil you don't, right? You don't know that devil that you don't know, and it's going to be worse. So you're better off with the devil that you do know. So, I mean, you know, we don't have much choice in it at all, I don't think, anyway. But, no, it was very thought-provoking and in-depth poem on the situation of governments today.
Oh, great comment there, Gray. Thank you very much, everybody. Great comments. I do like the question, which is a Machiavellian quote. Is it better to be loved or feared? And all of those who actually pay attention, they go with the feared angle. Why? Because the fear is a strong motivator to do either knuckle under or hide. So you end up with those tidbits of the underground, so to speak, but you also end up with a whole lot of people who do fear and therefore bend the knees to that which their particular brand of governance demands of them. So a lot of truth in there. Nicely done, Asama. Thank you. All right, there, Pam, where you want to go next?
All right. Up next, we have City Dwelling by Grant G. And Weaver, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, of course. All right, here we are, City Dwelling. As a small boy, apprehension fluttered in my stomach, making my mind race like stampeding horses galloping under dust clouds. Nothing was ever clear, except I couldn't be like this in my area. Poverty, crime, gangs, drugs ruled the city I lived. Too many wolves locked in the streets looking for scared little bunnies to prey on. Wits needed to be sharp, shoulders needed to sway, fists were always clenched, waiting on the threat which existed. Growing, I became hardened, unafraid. I even became attacker, something of which I am ashamed. But hey, this was a world where kids weren't allowed to play. It was a grown-up world which existed and fed on insanity and pain. End poem.
Great read, Weaver. Thank you very much. And Gray, why don't we start with you, please?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, Weaver, with your voice when you read, I felt like a child there. As my grandmother was laying, as I was laying there, she's putting me to sleep reading. I mean, it's that lulling effect that you have. It's just so beautiful. Anyway, sorry about that. The poem, you know, it's hard hitting, and it's it's a sad statement on life in the modern times for a lot of people who live in the city, you know, where the gangs, poverty, crime, drugs are ruling your situation, and it's full of insanity and pain, and it's just a dark, dark place to be as a child. You know, his opening stanza, as a small boy, apprehension fluttered in my stomach, making my mind race like stampeding horses galloping under dust clouds. I mean, that's an epic stanza, if you ask me. Very descriptive and engaging. Beautiful poem. Excellent read, Weaver.
Thank you.
Great comment. Great. Thank you. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, great read there, Weaver. You know, this one, I have to say, really did touch my heart because it had a raw honesty to it on how growing up in such an environment can make us both the victim and the villain. You know, where he admits, you know, I become hard and unafraid. I even became attacker, something of which I am ashamed. And I think a lot of people can relate to this when they grow up in such a dangerous, unloving environment that they become the bully, they become the attacker. And then, you know, grow through time, you know, we're, you know, and get away from being a product of their environment. You know, I like how he, I mean, this is a strong write all the way through it, in my opinion. But I particularly like where he says, nothing was ever clear except for I couldn't be like this in my area. Poverty, crime, gangs, drugs ruled in the city I live. Too many wolves lurked in the streets looking for scared little bunnies to prey on. It's that idea that you had to become just as dangerous as the people around you. So just a strong write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, first of all, that was a great read, and surely a very young grandmother. Wits needed to be sharp, shoulders needed to sway, fists were always clenched, waiting on the threat which existed. You live with a pendulum almost hanging, swinging over your head, getting lower and lower each time, because you're in an area, a society, as a victim, moribund and rigid to society, difficult to escape. The poverty, the crime, the drugs, they're poison that infects, and it pushes people past themselves, making them do things they might not do. But if you're ashamed of what you did, and after becoming hardened and unafraid, you somehow survived. Well, it was a grown-up world that existed, fed on insanity and pain. You become a victim of osmosis almost. Society sucks you in, become part of it. How do you escape it? Really well done.
Excellent thoughts there, Laurent. Thank you. This is very much a different right for Grant. It's personal. And it's a deep thought to that which is. And you look at all the huge cities over the centuries and what they produced, and the slum arenas, the backwaters where corruption is rampant. There isn't much hope for the youth within these arenas. You're either forced to kind of grow yourself into at least becoming that hardened so you can actually live and move on, or you end up, like you said, one of those bunnies that gets preyed on. So the idea is of that dog-eat-dog or the winner-take-all attitude does kind of point to the fact that you kind of breed that within these particular arenas. And yet, we still gravitate to large cities, and they just get worse and worse. Nicely done, Grant. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
Great comments there, got? Rex. All right. Up
did
next
we
have...
Comment? Sorry, did we forget to comment on that?
Yes, I forgot. Damn. I'm sorry, Weaver.
Oh, that's okay. No problem. I was quite happy to be skipped over, but... keeping very quiet. No, this this particular poem is so powerful. You might even say it's cathartic, because it seems to be something that was held inside is now suddenly put out for everybody to see. It must be so difficult. I mean, they say power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that is the case. That is so, because power is, it's a drug. It's it can be incredibly frightening in the wrong hands. But as this particular poem says, you've got to either go with it or you're lost. You've got no chance. I love the wits needed to be sharp, shoulders needed to sway. I thought that was just so indicative of exactly what it must have been like. You've got to look proud and strong. You can't show fear because those fists are waiting. So, yes, I thought it was incredible. I really, and I liked reading it, too. Thank you.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much there, Weaver. All right, Pam, now we come to you.
All right. Up next we have, emotion stains the weave of my tapestry, but no one can tell in the dark, by Pretty Bird. And Rex, go ahead and give that a repress, please.
All right. Emotion stains the weave of my tapestry, but no one can tell in the dark, by Pretty Bird. It is time to face the peeling paint of a smile that was lost in different colors of yesterday. Baked enamel eyes crystallized truth, cracking the porcelain facade that looks pristine from a distance. Crying locks and fine lines, and people say, you've aged gracefully, but old skin hardens in what it shows most, and there is comfort in sadness, a universal truth. Call me a witch or a wizard, a sorceress or just plain evil, I see what no one reveals. The lies unspoken and unseen gleam vibrant in a conversation that shows me your skin. No one ever likes looking at their own reflection. What I find beautiful, they find vile. Ticking time bombs lurk behind grease paint yesterdays and sugar floss futures. Pretense and falsehood break down and rot, overfeeding burdens you were never meant to shoulder. You don't scare me because I have always known the beauty skulking in the ebony recesses, starving for attention. You cannot bear your failures. I have seen none of you, those. A twist of perspective, I step outside the crumbling make-believe palaces that make the world a safer place. They can't hurt you if they don't really know you. You can pretend it's all true if it's all you choose to see. The face, the peeling paint of a smile that was lost in different colors of yesterday, but no one ever likes looking at their own reflection and home. All right, Pam, why don't you start us off?
Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. It's good to see you write by Pretty Bird. A wonderful vignette, strong sense of emotion throughout. I like how the main theme speaks on the idea of hiding yourself and then revealing yourself beneath that mask. And she wrote to the prompt, everyone sees what you appear to be, few see what you truly are, which was actually, I believe, our most chosen prompt, which is always fun to see which ones that get chosen the most. This is great all the way through, but I particularly like, but old skin hardens in what it shows most, and there's comfort in sadness, a universal truth. And it really, speaks and that idea that even if we don't speak the same language, there's emotions and there's experiences that everyone in the world holds in common. I also really like ticking time bombs lurk behind grease paint yesterday's and sugar floss futures, pretense and falsehoods break down and rot. Eventually, people are going to see the truth. They're going to see you for who you are. And I thought the ticking time bombs made for a really great metaphor in the idea that, you know, you can sugarcoat everything that you want, but eventually it's all just going to explode and be this huge mess. So a powerful and emotive rite, and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Roth, how about you?
It's quite an excellent piece. The peeling paint of a smile that was lost and become colors of yesterday, baked enamelized, crystallized truth, cracking the porcelain facade that looks pristine from a distance. You don't get too close, because then you see things differently. They say that fine lines come from smiling. Here she says, crying locks in fine lines. And people say you've aged gracefully. But then the fact that skin hardens shows that most of us do cry. The ability to see in others what they choose not to reveal because you find it beautiful. I found a very interesting, the worded perspective. You don't scare me because I've always known the beauty skulking in the ebony recesses, starving for attention. You see, that's a different kind of beauty, not the facial beauty which she also touches on. But no one ever likes looking at their own reflection. I think it's astonishingly true. Sometimes you meet people, and they're just like you, but you hate them instantly because they possess the ugliness in them that you hate in yourself. Therefore, you hate them. Great piece.
Excellent. Thank you. And Weaver, how about you?
Oh, there was so much in this poem that I've really... It kind of hits home, doesn't it? You think everything's going wonderfully and, you know, time doesn't really matter. Who cares about a line here, a wrinkle there? But in actual fact, it's not just getting older on the outside. It's how you feel on the inside as well. So basically, she says here, which I thought was brilliant, you don't scare me because I have always known the beauty skulking in the ebony recesses, starving for attention. Which I think is very evocative line. But I feel that inside all of us, we don't actually feel as though we've aged. So I think that's maybe why we don't like looking in the mirror, because you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm still 18. And then you look in the mirror and you think, no, perhaps I'm not. So yes, I thought this was a very interesting, very well written, clever poem. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Gray, how about you?
Well, the poem is definitely thought-provoking. It's introspective, and it's insightful in its views that, you know, she expresses here of, you know, not wanting to see our reflections in the mirror and that how troubling that is, you know. And I think Weaver hit it on the head with the, you know, you feel 18 and then you look in the mirror. I mean, that's me every day. But, you know, I still lie to myself, you know, after I walk away from that mirror, I'm still 18. So, no, wonderful comments on this poem. Beautiful poem. Excellent read as well.
Great comments, everybody. Thank you. I was drawn to that third vignette. Call me a witch or wizard. A sorceress that just plain evil. I see what no one reveals. The lies unspoken and unseen. Green vibrant in a conversation that shows me your skin. No one ever likes looking at their own reflection. What I find beautiful, they find vile. There's that note of honesty, looking at oneself and understanding that which everyone else offers up as themselves, the mask they hide behind, the emotions they refuse to tickle at because they're afraid of them. And the fact that even with everything that the world puts on, the airs, the masks, the thought of the lies they tell themselves and the world, hey, you know what? You can age gracefully if you're always honest with yourself as to what is going on, as opposed to that which you keep filling with loose lips. So, I can age easily because I know who and what I am, opposed to what you think you are and who you really depict. Nicely done there, pretty bird. Thank you.
All right, Pam.
All right. Up next, we have Mirage by Betty Page, and it goes like this. I appear so strong, not shattered within, broken, bleeding out, fading. End poem.
Oh, great read. And that was strangely short.
Yeah.
Betty.
No, I need a drink.
Okay, we'll go with that. Gray, why don't we start with you?
Well, you did a fantastic read on that, Pam. But for such a brevity, it has a lot of power to it, you know. I appear so strong, not shattered within, broken, bleeding out, fading. And, you know, that's true about so many people, unfortunately, is that, you know, they put this strong front on, but they're broken inside. Yeah, just a haunting, right?
Thank you, Gray. And Weaver, how about you?
Oh, I agree totally. There's so much. I envy anybody who can put so much into so few words. It's incredible. I mean, yes, exactly. We all appear to, well, no, we don't all appear to be strong, but we do like to try and appear to be strong. And no one knows what's going on inside. You know, you walk past people, you meet people in the office, you sit in a cafe with people around you. No idea what's going on with their lives. Unless they actually stood up and shouted, I've had enough, you know, you wouldn't know, would you? And that's a sad thing, because you can't help someone if you don't know what's wrong with them. So yes, being strong is great. But sometimes, you know, you have to sort of reach out and say, well, look, I am shattered. I am broken and I need help, which a lot of people can't do, which is very sad. But yes, a really strong, really strong poem, and I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thank you, Weaver. All right, Laurent, how about you?
Well, Mirage, the bare essentials of the unseen, rewarding in its pithiness. I liked it.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Thank you. All right, Pam. I think it's the shortest piece you've ever read. So what about you?
Yes. Well, you know, I decided since Gene wasn't here that I would get to read the shortest piece on the board.
Don't be surprised if she's listening in and you get a whole shitload of coal dumped on your doorstep.
Oh, I know it. But you know what? It's still cold in Wisconsin, so I could use the coal.
I promise you she's asleep.
All right. But, you know, first of all, I have to agree with everything that everyone said, especially Weaver, when you said that for some people it is difficult to reach out. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll be right back. What the heck? Okay, never mind. All right. I don't know. Sorry. I thought I heard something. Okay, so anyways, I agree with what Weaver had to say about the whole, you know, that it's difficult to reach out. And what I think is, she wrote to this quote, you know, everyone sees what you appears to be, but rather than being about somebody else, she made it very personal. I think that this is very relatable because, you know, to me, I can understand this, how you put on this front to look strong and brave for everyone else, but on the inside, you know, you feel shattered and broken and fading, and you just don't want people to know how weak you feel at times. So just an amazing write and very well done.
Great comments, everybody. Did you fail to tighten up those shackles from the beast in the basement?
Yes, you know. You know how it goes. You know, I try to do
great
a show
comment.
And the slaves all start acting up. It's just chaos.
Great comments, everybody. And, damn, I can't offer anything intelligence, but I think the Mirage was the right angle. It does hit on that note that's thought to the masks one wears just to prove that the they are strong enough to deal with just about anything, even when they're not. So, nicely done, Betty. All right. Since the beast hasn't gotten loose, where do you want to go next?
All right. Well, up next, we're going to do another SoundCloud. There is nothing more inviting by Titus Llewellyn. And we have a recording for that. So let me find that. And do-do-do-do-do. Here we go.
There is nothing more inviting It would appear, no matter how I've tried, fitting in would enable me to hide from anyone who makes up their minds to detest me for my very presence. Find, although may that be their blindness, a mindless few who cannot show kindness, why it was their hate for me would reveal something they cannot, and that is to feel. There are vibes I know if being unliked, for no apparent reason, having psyched out the devil for all I know, to ask why some bad person could more or less try not to hate another, reasons given none. Nothing I can do, then nothing can be done, for the want of asking, passing by, although there's nothing more inviting than hello.
Great read, Titus. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is really appreciated. And Weaver, why don't we start with you, please?
Yes, of course. Oh, this is a beautiful, beautiful piece of writing. I actually felt everything. Oh, yes. There are vibes I know of being unlike for no apparent reason. Which, this is what has always fascinated me. You know how you can meet somebody and you can immediately think, I don't like you? It would appear that your brain has filed away all the impressions you've had of people in the past. And so when you come across someone who has the same looks or personality or whatever, your mind says that you can't trust them, which is terrifying, isn't it, really? Because you don't give them a chance, because you've already decided you don't like them, which is what's happening here. This situation for the person, look at the girl in the photograph. Isn't that beautiful? Highlighted completely and looking so sad. No matter how I've tried, fitting in would enable me to hide from anyone who makes up their mind to detest me for my very presence. And it happens. We know what happens. And it must be horrible. I found this sad, very sad, but beautifully written. Thank you.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much, Weaver. And Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, to try to fit in can be a difficult task. There's a wonderful involvement in this compound sentence, broken up so beautifully. I won't attempt to reread it. He reads much too beautifully. But no matter how I've tried to hide from anyone who makes up their mind to hate me for my presence, find why it was their hate would reveal something they cannot, and that it is to feel. What a wonderful, wonderful message there is in that stanza. That enables us to understand that they do not know how to reveal that they don't feel. And as a consequence, perhaps they are going to show that hatred. And I won't even attempt the second stanza. It's far too beautiful for me to be clumsy with. So I'll simply say that Titus always transcends.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this one. It was a beautiful background music that he chose. I can see why Sapphire Rose put this on her deep meaning poems list. I really like how the general idea of the poem is, you know, not to, to judge other people, but to get to know them, and also the importance of, you know, of, you know, saying hello, of reaching out to somebody. This is beautiful all the way through. It really a strong write. And but I really like why it was their hate for me would reveal something that they cannot, and that is to feel. Like, you know, it reminds me of that quote that says, you know, that if somebody hates you or dislikes you, it reveals more about them than it does about you. And also the ending, for the want of asking, passing by, although there's nothing more inviting than hello, that reach out to that person, you know, reach out and help someone to feel good and to feel loved and accepted. You know, I think this is a beautiful, heartfelt write and very well done.
Oh, thank you, Pam. And Gray, how about you?
Well, your contest has really brought out some amazing poetry, you know, inspired by your Machiavellian quotes. But, you know, this poem is definitely another insightful, thought-provoking poem filled with mastery, I think. And the read was beautiful as well. Well, great job.
Thank you, everybody. Titus loves doing a running into history. And I'm wondering if this might not also be something he did with this, because I get the distinct impression this could have come from the mind of how John Merrick viewed the world because of his deformities, his the way he appeared and how he was reviled despite the huge intellect that he had at that time. And that thought, that last time, last 2 lines, for the want of asking, passing by, although there's nothing more inviting than hello. There's that note. He was so looked upon dismally that just to actually get a hello would be something that sparkled his day alive. So nicely done, Titus. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
All right.
Bring you on again.
All right. Up next, I'm going to put your poem, Laurent. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
All right. Let me just get back to the proper page. Sorry. All right. This is based on he who seeks to deceive will always find someone willing to be deceived. And that works. Studded in rainbows. Bless the muggins, the gullible, unsteeped in guile, walking roads paved with fool's gold. Any cockamamie street scheme will do. Follow the pea under the shell, fast road to poverty in motion. All the hangers-on are complicit, parting the sheep from their fleece. Chumps arse about, oh, so clever. Not for the love, though. Love awaits, but for money, that sweet syrup oozing from their pockets. And should they stumble onto love, unknowingly kick it aside, like a rock in the road impeding travel, blind to both honesty and subterfuge. Not understanding one leads to confusion regarding the other. Do not tides advance and recede, covering, uncovering what was hidden? They seek the meteor streaking from the sky to earth, blasting diamonds across their path in wide swaths. An earth studded in rainbows that can't be picked up. A dollar and a dream daily. Flint is worn, sparking no blaze. The rough tumble of sticks used to beat the drums of life break, one by one by one. The knife trying too hard to win never hears love knocking at the door without deception or pretension. All that is required is the faith to follow the honesty extant in moments of small sound that love makes. End poem.
Great read aloud. Thank you very much. And Pam, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, great read there, Lawrence. Oh my gosh, I really enjoy this one, you know, from the very beginning. And of course, you know, I did have to look up a couple words like, you know, muggins, and there was another one. There was one word where I thought, you know, is Lawrence just making up words here? But sure enough, you were not. You know, bless the muggins, the gullible, unsteepable, and guile, walking roads paved with fool's gold. Any cockamamie street scheme will do. You know, it just seems so often that fate or gods, you know, whatever higher power you want to call it, seems to watch over those fools that just stumble along in life. I really like this all the way through, but, you know, they seek the meteor streaking from the sky to earth, blasting diamonds across their path in wide swaths, and earth studding in rainbows that can't be picked up, dull in a dream daily, flint is worn, sparkling, no blaze. You know, that idea of seeking those riches that aren't going to mean anything in the end. And nace, that was a word I wasn't sure, but I did look that one up, and so thank you for the opportunity to learn. I always appreciate that in poetry, and strong lines about that dollar, that dream that we just try to grasp, and in the end we end up losing what's truly important, the idea that as they're fishing for that gold in the pond, they don't hear that love calling to them. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you so much.
Well said, Pam. And Gray, how about you?
You know, your words are wise and meaning, you know, you painted this picture of a journey through life that is just, you know, dark and filled with without love, and you know, always falling, looking for, you know, your next dollar, and in the end you end it with all that is required is the faith to follow, the honesty, extent in moments of small sound that love makes. You know, he ended it beautifully as well, so great job.
Thank you, Gray.
Absolutely.
And Weaver, how about you?
Yes, it is an incredible piece of work. I really enjoyed it. I like the fact that you put in the AN more about the deceived than the deceiver, which is exactly what it is. It's more about the people who, they never, ever learn. It's like, I suppose, getting a lottery ticket every single week and never, ever win. You just keep doing it just in case. This is the same thing. I love this one. Follow the pea under the shell, fast road to poverty in motion, which is exactly, you know, find the lady. It's all the hangers-on are complicit, parting the sheep from their fleece. The words you use and the way it flows is so good. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Great comments, everybody. I too like the thought that you started off with the muggins, the gullible ones. That was a great touch. But you could also have used muggles, those who don't have the wherewithal within the game itself. There's, like everybody else said, a fool and their money are oft soon parted because they're willing to gamble on that notion, yet are not willing to gamble on something else that might actually step beside them and might actually give them that richness that they are actually looking for, the difference being the monetary wealth as opposed to the wealth of self, so to speak. And that's what you're hitting on with this. Really well done, too.
Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome. All right, Pam, back to you.
Hi. All right. Up next, we have Mate by Weaver of Dreams. And Weaver, you were nice enough to supply us with a recording, so I'll go ahead and push play.
I am always there for you. When another woman lets you down, I pick you up, polish your ego, send you off to play another day. You will never know that you are more to me than a mate. You hug me when we meet. I want your body, strong, heavy, naked. You kiss my cheek. My lips are hungry to feel your mouth devour me. If you sleep on my couch, I picture you opening my bedroom door when I'm wearing nothing but Chanel No. 5, not these snaggy old PJs. Your hands are gentle, hot, insistent. I murmur more, and you smile. You would be my first, my love. The thought that it might never happen makes me sob. That's when you stroll in. You put your arms around me, wipe away my tears. As you look into my eyes, I see an odd expression. There is awareness, desire. You say, Samantha, not Sam, and kiss me. Lost in a passion I didn't know was possible, I feel you hesitate, unsure. Move 1 inch away from me, and I will implode. I snarl. You smile.
Great read, Weezer. Thank you very much for that sound card. All right, Laurent, why don't we kick it off with you?
Well, okay. Love your reads. You set a tone to the words, to the poem, excuse me, that matches your words beautifully. You are a woman who stands by her man, always there for him. More than a mate. The feel of his body heavy on you is something that you want, that you need. You have a hunger for him. And when he strolls in and sees the odd expression in your eyes, there's awareness, desire, and then it's Samantha, not Sam. And the moment you feel him hesitate, the tone of your voice from the entire poem just completely changes. Move 1 inch away from me and I will implode. You snarl. Yeah, I mean, that was a great ending. I really do like this. It's honest but sly. There's a subtle wit in your words. And I like that. Great piece.
Thank you.
Well said, Laurent. Pam, how about you?
Well, first of all, wonderful read there, Weaver. I just think you just have a beautiful reading voice. I like that you went with prompt 4. Men are driven by two principal impulses, either by love or by fear. And to me, your write encapsulated both of those feelings. And I like how the main theme is about loving someone, being attracted to someone, and them not knowing it, that having that friendship, but wanting more. And so on one hand, you've got love, the love that you're feeling, the attraction that you're feeling. But on the other hand, you have the fear of telling the other person, because by their actions, by their choices, over the years, it seems as if you're nothing more than, you know, an opportunity for them to have their ego stroked and polished as, you know, another woman hurts them. And, you know, it's that fear of showing your true self. So I think it also works really well with that prompt, you know, the idea of no one really knows who you truly are, as well as prompt 4. I really had to smile at, I picture you opening my bedroom door when I'm wearing nothing but Chanel No. 5, not these snaggy old PJs. See, that would be me. It would totally be me. Most of the time, I'm wearing, you know, I look like I'm dressed in plaid or, you know, my plaid nightgowns or whatever, you know. But I like to imagine that I'm wearing the Chanel No. 5 and the, you know, the hot little numbers. But the emotion in this, the raw, honest emotion, is what really drives it home. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you.
Well said, Pam. Gray, how about you?
Well, you remember when I said that, you know, I picked your grandma reading to me? Well, this time I overheard grandma telling grandpa a bedtime story, and I'm kind of traumatized, so I don't know how to go from there. But no, this was deeply passionate and sensual throughout, you know. You have such a beautiful heart and soul, you know, shining through this piece, and I thought it was wonderful. Excellent SoundCloud as well.
Thank you.
Great commentary. I think this is the reality of hope that morphs into the reality that is promised. And you drop in those little tidbits of humor like those the snaggy old PJs just as a nice little offset point to hint at what's going on, but also separate the thought with the idea of Chanel No. 5 wearing nothing but that. And then right after that snaggy old PJs, you hit on your hands are gentle, hot, insistent, and I murmur more. But then again, at the finish of that, the thought that it might never happen makes me stop. Then that strolls into, then you stroll in, you put your arms around me, Samantha. But then again, you drop that nice little tidbit of humor again to finish. Move a 1 inch away from me, and I will implode with that snarling thought. And then the smile that comes afterwards, which kind of finishes off the note to the bit of playfulness as well. But the thought of going from one end to the other and it actually working out. Nicely done.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm a little bit embarrassed because I've forgotten I'd written this. And I hadn't realized quite how steamy it was. And
Those
I wasn't thinking
guys.
I was going to be here. Oh, no. I do apologize.
Never be embarrassed. It was a good ride.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. Anyway, I know.
It was a wonderful ride.
Thank you.
A wonderful ride. No need to apologize at all.
Thank you.
All right, Pam. What next do we indulge in?
All righty. Up next, we have Forever the Nonconformist by Sapphire Rose, and we have a recording for that, so here we go.
Forever the Nonconformist. Society assigns individuals their social status based on earnings and occupation. I have never been one to follow rules. Right from the start, I was a rule breaker, a risk taker, the black sheep, a loner. Do I care about setting the standard? Hell no. I am like a raging inferno. I don't like structure. I am not a controlled burn. I am incorrigible, and I like it that way. There are days I am torn between what society expects of me and what I feel is right. We all have a purpose in this life, and whether we choose to follow the herd remains an individual choice. I will forever remain the nonconformist, living my life as I see fit, freeing myself from the dictatorship of society while continuing to push societal boundaries until my last dying breath. End poem.
Great read, Sapphire. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. Really appreciate it. And Weaver, why don't we start with you, please?
Just so much. Beautifully read, too. Lovely tone. And I like, it's nice to hear them being read because the emphasis that the poet wants put on the words is there for you to hear, which is just great. It adds everything to it. I have to say that I totally agree with this. Never be one to follow rules. I was always a rule breaker, a risk taker. I have always been out of step with everybody. It's just the way some people are, I think. I've always worked within a group of men, being the only woman, because I worked in electronics, so I can understand this, the black sheep, a loner. Do I care about setting the standard? Hell no. So, yes, everything about this spoke to me, I think, is the way I could put it. And it was beautifully written. It was very intelligently written, too, so I enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Weaver. And, Laurent, how about you?
This is passionately written. I'm like a raging inferno. I don't like structure. I'm not a controlled burn. I am incorrigible, and I like it that way. I admire the writing, the tone, and the message. But sometimes somebody can be too over the top. You can't violate every precept of society and expect to be accepted in any way. I mean, now, if it's just mild societal cultural differences, that's one thing. So I was kind of doubting where she was going, but at the end, I will forever remain the nonconformist, and I can understand that, living my life as I see fit, freeing myself from the dictatorship of society. And you wonder sometimes, well, what is a dictatorship? You know, do you want to marry a horse? You know, society is not going to accept that. But if you want to live a completely different lifestyle, then the dictatorship then becomes the structure of the civilization, where most people live, how they live, how they're taxed, what they're allowed to do, say, the possibilities open to them, wherever they particularly are. If you want to escape all of that, not bad, but if you try and fight everything, you're never going to win. But until my last dying breath, I love the way she expressed this.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Pam, how about you?
I like this. I'm glad that she chose the quote, I'm not interested in preserving the status quo, I want to overthrow it. And I actually think that's a perfect quote for Sapphire to choose because it very much captures her personality. I thought this was a strong write, but I particularly am drawn to, I am not a control burn. I am incorrigible, and I like it that way. And also, there are days I am torn between what society expects of me and what I feel is right. And I feel like that, to me, that's a particularly strong part because it reminds us that the expectations of society isn't what's always right for the individual. And I like that this is about being true to your own self and not being the, you know, the one who follows along with the herd. So excellent write and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. Thank you. Gray, how about you?
I don't know. It's kind of like she wrote my autobiography. I mean, I've always been a rebel nonconformist myself, so she speaks my language in this write. It was a great time, Claude, as well.
Thank you, Gray. I like the voice in this. It has an adult tone, but the angle taken comes across like teenage years where, oh, we're trying to find ourselves, yet we don't sit in with the conformity of family and society at that point because of we're trying to figure out our own space in that realm. So it kind of hits on that notion of those teenage years where everything is kind of up in the air and you're trying to work yourself in, figure out what is, and you are that black sheep, that loner, that raging inferno, you're incorrigible. And then there, like you said, there are days I'm torn between what society expects me and what I feel is right. And we all have a purpose in this life, whether we choose to follow the herd remains an individual choice. And there is that note of trying to not just to fit into society as a whole, but fitting in as that teenager in that realm where all of a sudden there are clicks to this and that and everything else, and you don't know where you want to go or if you want to walk in that particular realm. So nicely done, Sapphire. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. Go back to TV.
All right. Up next we have It Wasn't a Whimper by Julie Burke. And it goes like this. It wasn't a whimper, perhaps a moan. Wasn't it you who said I die alone? Mr. Big Shot status quo. What do you even fucking know? You shanghaied me to another place. It felt good. It felt safe. I wondered, am I dead? All that aside, bury me in a coffin made of red leather. Maggots feed better off of cowhide, such as the rumor. In the mortician's head, what's wrong with this weather? Seems the storm has turned south. The clouds complain how they don't even feel like floating. That angers me for some reason, but my mouth stays shut. And the sky, like jaundice, turns to yellow. It wasn't even a snivel. What was it then? What, perhaps a whale? A whine? Wasn't it me who said for you to go to hell? And you who said that we'd be fine? End poem.
Very good, Pam. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Julie Buck has a wonderful attitude. She can be quite risque. She can be always on point. It wasn't a whimper, perhaps a moan. It wasn't a you who said, I die alone. Been a turnaround. The lines, maggots feed better off of cowhide, such as the rumor in the mortician's head. I enjoy her humor. And the odd observations of clouds complaining, how they don't even feel like floating, which angers her. The sky had jaundiced yellow. Yet what was he whining about? Well, would be fine? No, I don't think so. I like Julie Bugs poetry. I like this one.
Weaver, how about you?
Yes, this is I like this a lot. I really is. Pardon me. Wasn't it you who said I'd die alone? You shanghaied me to another place. It felt good. It felt safe. So yes, at the beginning, it was a good relationship. It was fine. And then things happened. Things got perhaps not as good as they were. And she's wondering, is she dead? Is she actually dead? Has it now happened? Or is that just the way she feels about the life she's leading at the moment? So she gets angry, but she doesn't say anything. That is obviously that's the way this relationship has gone. Whimper a moan, doesn't actually say anything. Keeps it to herself. And then when she tells him to go, he says, no, everything will be fine. I wondered if she believed him yet again. Or did she go? Anyway, yes, very, very interesting. Lots of questions in this, which I enjoy. It's not just laid out for you to, to word by word you understand. You have to think about it. And I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Greg, how about you?
Yeah, it was a beautiful poem, the way it's laid out is striking. It hits you hard, and it's powerful, impactful, and it's insightful and self-reflective. Just a beautiful poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Grant. Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, I always enjoy reading Julie, and I like her style. She packs so much in her right. I like that this touches on the idea of going out with a whimper instead of going out with a bang. I liked the visceral imagery. I liked how raw and gritty this is. I like how it's about, it can be about literal death, almost like the idea of someone who's been murdered and which gives it kind of an Edgar Allan Poe feel. But it's also can be on a metaphorical death, the death of a relationship or the death of self in order to keep a relationship. Wonderful use of imagery. I really like that angers me for some reason. My mouth stays shut and the sky like jaundice turns to yellow. It wasn't even a snivel. What was it then? What? You know, just trying to figure out, you know, I like the questions and the trying to figure it out, all out. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comments, everybody. I walk in that same thought that both Pam and Weaver hit on. Metaphorical vein that was dropped into this was really nicely done. And it does hit on that thought of just the disintegration of the sense of who they were as to who they now are. Much be done, Julie. Thank you. All right, Pam.
All right. Let me just post my comment there because Laurent is going to bed. So good night, Laurent. Thank you for calling in. And up next, we have The Old Clock on the Grandfather's Wall by Chamath Akalanka and Gray. Would you give that a read for us, please?
Sure, absolutely. The Old Clock on the Grandfather's Wall. There is an old clock on the grandfather's wall. He was my friend. I still think of him. He gave me a mirror, yet a mirror is dumb to his reflection.
Great read, Gray. Thank you very much for the read. Pam, let's start.
Well, I thought this was a great brevity with some wonderful imagery and metaphors. And it actually made me think of a couple pieces of artwork at my grandmother's house. And that was a statue of a knight in armor and then actually a grandfather's clock. You know, it makes me think about that idea of how, you know, artwork or, you know, can be such an important part of your memories. But it's not just that. It's, to me, it's also a reflection of speaking of an elderly man, perhaps his, you know, probably his grandfather, somebody that he was close to and somebody that he has aspired to be like, but I feel like the end line speaks, and this is just my thoughts on it, I could be off, but to me, the end line speaks of how when we really admire someone and we want to be like them, but we feel like we fall short of those expectations, or perhaps we learn more about them as we get older and we realize that maybe they weren't the hero we thought they were. I think it could go either way. I really like how much that thought-provoking line he's put in this brevity. So very well done.
Well said, Sam. Thank you. And Weaver, how about you?
Yes, I agree. That last line is a doozy. You know, it's all of it, the clock on the wall. So he was very close to his grandfather. His grandfather gave him a mirror. Possibly, you were right, that he is actually, he hopes he can reflect his grandfather. He hopes he can be the man his grandfather was. But there is no answer. There is nothing coming back from that mirror. It's not telling him anything. But still he'll strive. He'll keep his grandfather's memory in his mind, and he will strive to be that man. And let's hope he doesn't actually need an answer. He can just carry on and be the man he wants to be. But yes, I thought it was very thought-provoking and really, really interesting, and I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Oh, well said, Lisa. Thank you. And Gray, you got to read this. How about you?
You know, like, your poems are so introspective and reflective, you know, self-reflecting. I mean, this speaks to a clock on the wall that, you know, was his friend. And gave him a mirror, you know, but a mirror is dumb to his reflection, you know, because he can't see it, he's a clock. But, you know, it was still part of this child's life, which is you know, a wonderful thing to have is an imagination as a child. So I thought it was well written.
Thank you, Gary. I kind of go up that too. Old clock that hits on that notion of the passage of time and the fact that talking backwards in time on that grandfather's wall, and though he was my friend, I still think of him. So there is that note of memory. And the sword of the mirror, I think it goes back to not just in trying to image grandfather in himself. It might be the mirror as a representative sort to look in the mirror, view yourself for who you are, not who you think or what I represent. But remember, you are you. You are not me. So the idea is make sure you grow to be that which you're supposed to be instead of that which you think you're meant to be. Nicely done from me. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. What are you doing there?
All right. Well, I have to say, really great observations that you had there, Rex. I liked your thoughts. And up next we have Rose Colored Mirror by Duncan Ross Bell. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
I like the title, Rose Colored Mirror by Duncan Ross Bell. A life too close to the surface, a chill too close to the bone, chasing a hole for a rabbit, burning a tooth for his habit. Rabbit and praise the sin, thin morals and pious robe. Poor me, look in my eyes, I will look right through you. One tree, two color sky, three pebbles and a point of view. Do the gun and space the gap, tap in the soliloquy, ramble on, skip the way to this day. No answers, disasters and chapters, flesh wrappers and verse. Am I the man, I rehearse? All right, Ann, what you got?
I really enjoyed this one, and great read there, Rex. I have to agree with you. That's a great title. Instead of the rose-colored glasses on how we see the rest of the world, the rose-colored mirror and how we see ourselves. And, you know, wow, really great images all the way through. I did like the Alice in Wonderland reference, chasing a hole for a rabbit. That was really clever flip of phrasing. You know, instead of chasing the rabbit, you're chasing the hole. Thin morals and pious robes, poor me, look in my eyes. I like how we look at the idea of a religious leader and the moral and immoral choices they make. And it can apply to anyone, but it particularly stands out in this idea of, you know, the question, you know, am I as a spiritual leader, am I being who I'm supposed to be? You know, I think it can work two ways. It can be the spiritual leader that's honestly concerned about being a strong leader in the spirituality of life, but also the one I think it most likely touches on is that idea of those who commit atrocities and hope to cover it up by rehearsing, you know, disasters and chapters, flesh wrappers and verse. Am I the man I rehearse? Wonderful rhyme there. But also just a really just raw and haunting thought to the idea of people who put on a show to whitewash what they're trying to hide. So just a powerful write and very well done.
Well, as you said, Dan, thank you. And Gray, how about you?
You know, you guys have had some fabulous poetry tonight, and this is no... You know, this is definitely one of those fabulous poems. You know, it really takes you through a journey in the human psyche, you know, as you weave and bob through life trying to figure out who you are. And you finally look in the mirror and say, am I the man I rehearse? You know, is this really me? Very thought-provoking poem. Wonderful. Excellent. Read, Rex.
And Weaver, how about you?
Oh, yes, I agree. That first stanza is just, there's so much in it. A life too close to the furnace, a chill too close to the bone. Oh, that is chilling. Chasing a hole for a rabbit, that's lovely. Burning a priest for his habit. Grab it and praise the sin. Thin morals and pious robes. This is something that, it's harped on quite a lot, isn't it? A priest and his habits and his morals. Oh, my PC's telling me things. Be quiet, PC. Poor me, look in my eyes. I will look right. Yes, it has. Oh, sorry. Now I've lost the poem. Bear with me a second, please. I'll get it. Anyway, so yes, I'll look right through you. One tree, two color skies, three pebbles and a point of view. Yes, very, very interesting. The fact that he's chipping away, trying to get answers. There are no answers. And basically he just has to say, right, am I the man I rehearse? And he will keep on trying, obviously, but there's an awful lot for him that he wants answers to. But yes, very, very interesting, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Great comments, everybody. Yeah, that first stanza, there's a whole lot of feeling impetus that might be drawn out of that stanza by itself. Mm-hmm. And you could run the whole thing as a singularity through that person, or you could option up that at first is about the priest, the second is about the one that has been taken by the priest. And his viewpoint, especially considering you've got rose-colored mirror as the thought that I can walk two ways, the singularity to that priest itself, or the fact that maybe he's done something, and the second part is a reflection through the eyes of the one done to. He hits on that thought, three pebbles and a point of view, kind of hit on that the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit angle, and a point of view as to reality. Trapped in the soliloquy, that angle of always that revolving thought of the voice itself. A ramble on, chipping away to this day, no answers. No answers could be to the thought why it happened. And the back angle, am I the man I rehearse? Be the one because you're looking through the rose-colored mirror trying to convince yourself you aren't the one who is now the same as that which you were first encountered, or literally it could be right on down to the sort of to begin with, from start to finish, so kind of torn between the two, but they work. Well done, Duncan. Thank you. All right, Pam, what you got next?
All right, up next is The Meat Story by Mark Loopy. Yeah.
No, it's just funny because we used to do
quite a few
stuffing pig parties, and I cut a head off, and I saran wrapped the women's toilet, and I stuck this in between the toilet seat and the bowl for the girls to go in there and freak out when they saw the pig looking up through.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, evil. Evil man.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, my goodness. All right. And Weaver, would you give this a read for us, please?
Yes, of course. A bullet through the head. After all, you're pork. That is what they said. Cut in various shapes, toyed at with a fork, till they're all well fed. Distant cousin apes. The hardest part, my head, still maintained its stare, watched with glassy eyes, then rinse and wrap each slice. They worked with gentle care. End poem.
Oh great. We were thinking. Still has me thinking of that toilet. Oh, great. How do we start with you, please?
I really liked it, you know. And I liked your little antidote there. But you did a beautiful job of reading it, Weaver. But, I mean, you can see this as you read it, a bullet through the head after all your pork. That's what they said. Cut in various shapes, toyed with that fork, till they were all well fed, distant cousin apes. But I mean, yeah, I mean, they use pig transplants for humans. Or, you know, they do a lot of testing with pigs for, you know, organs and stuff. So they are closely related to the humans. And, but you know, this is definitely a powerful little brevity. You know, you can picture all this as you read it. So, well done.
Thank you, Gray. Pam, how about you?
I enjoyed it. Well, first of all, I too enjoyed your little, your story there, Rex. That cracked me up. Great read, Weaver. There's the different things I think of when I think of this. I think of the movie Pulp Fiction, where the two main characters, the hitmen, are talking in the car about how, what meat they do and don't eat, and you know, like, and so that makes me think of that scene in the movie Pulp Fiction. It also makes me think of the book Animal Farm, or the story. You know, and I like how he puts a lot into this, and a bullet through the head, after all, your pork, that is what they said. And it really makes you think that there's a deeper level to this poem, in the idea of how some people's worth is judged less than others. You know, I like that he did this from the meat perspective. You know, this always reminds me of when my son Gideon was like 12 years old and he wanted to get head cheese. And he told me that if there was any eyeballs in the head cheese, that he would get to eat them because he was the man of the house. He had seen on some like cooking traveling show that the man of the house ate the eyeballs.
Yeah,
and I was
so
like,
you
go for
it. Yeah, no, I ain't doing that.
By the way, we did get head cheese. There was no eyeballs. As I will tell you, it was the first and last time. I am not a fan of head cheese. But I do like how, for me, this really talks about self-worth and how we judge who's worthy to live and who's not worthy. You know, a powerful right and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Weaver, how about you?
Oh, yes. Such a strong poem. A bullet through the head, after all, your pork. Ah. And the fact that, you know, that he's there as food and people just toy with it because they're so well fed. And that so the distant cousin apes, you know, basically he's saying, as you said, why should he be the one that's sitting there looking at them glassy-eyed while they enjoy themselves? Why is it him, and why, you know, why is he being picked? It makes me think, I can understand vegetarians. Now it's made me think, and it is very thought-provoking. And I haven't actually thought about that side of things so much, because everything's neatly packed in on a shelf in the supermarket, and you don't have to think about where it came from. And this has really, that's really touched me a lot. And especially that distant cousin apes, because that's, we are, we're all connected in some way, right? At the very beginning of life, we are all connected. We came out of the sea, we evolved, and we all went our different ways. But yes, I think I may become a vegetarian. But very well done, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Oh, I like the metaphorical play in this, especially with that bottom end. Them rinse and wrap each slice. They work with gentle care. There's a thought to there of an autopsy being done, so to speak. The bullet through the head, after all your pork, kind of hints at the notion of the way a lot of people think of cops, pigs, and they need to be extricated from the environment. So this works on a number of angles that you can actually play with, the glassy eyes, just the inference to death in the moment, and how people toyed at with a fork till they're all well fed. Hey, stripping down the sort of society itself, but also there is that angle of, what was it? Great hit on that, the thought with how close we are. Yeah, we use the pigs as, when it comes to seeing how, when it does come to the angle in science, pigs, skin and flesh, muscle, all that tonnage acts just the same way human flesh does. So they get used for the impacts and bruising and how bullets react upon their flesh. And I, after having been in the industry for about 40 years, I have stripped many animals down. So I understand the angle of the thought of actually doing this, but most people don't because they only see the back end product. They never actually get to see the full thought and how you break it down. And I think that's a good point, too. You got to understand the food that you do eat and consume and where it actually comes from and how it actually gets there. It doesn't magically appear in your grocery stores on a shelf all wrapped up neatly and ready to go. It has to be dealt with in particular manners to actually come there for the York consumption. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right, our last poem for the night, and the rest will be carried over to Friday's Break On Through show, is In All Its Glory by Halo of Mindfulness. And Gray, would you give that a read for us, please?
In All Its Glory by Halo of Mindfulness. I am not my image or my story. I am consciousness living in all its glory. I am the cat, paws, paddling across the floor. I am this moment, no longer to ignore. I am the senses and all they bequeath. I am the wind blowing through the trees. I am the sun shining oft, often behind cloud. I am the observing, alone and in a crowd. I am the bird gliding across the sky. I am eternity in a newborn's eyes. I am the silence before the sound, space in which all can be found. I am not my image nor my story. I am life flowing now in all its glory. End poem.
Great read, great. Thank you very much. I like that. And Weaver, why don't we start with you, please?
Yes, this is really beautiful. I love it. Just everything about it. I'm consciousness living in all its glory. So we have it in all its glory is there. And he is everything. He knows, he sees, he observes. He's a bird, newborn eye. Yes, so much in this. But I suppose basically the poet's saying that none of us are just one person. None of us have just one story. Everything around us makes a difference to our lives and changes us. Everything we see and experience is life flowing in all its glory. Yes, I enjoy that an awful lot. There's an awful lot to this. I would like to read this again, actually. But yes, it was really insightful, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Eva. Pam?
I really like this, a strong spiritual right. I like the use of the I am, the same phrase used by Christ to, stir up the Pharisees. It's actually the shortest English phrase in the Bible, a sentence in the Bible. And to me, it speaks on the spirituality that's within all of us and that God isn't just a Godhead, but rather the spirituality, the connection of all of nature, all of life. But I also think it really touches on what Weaver had to say, in that there's more to each one of us than what people see, and what we see. You know, we are more than just the gossip, the story that people tell. We are every one of our experiences. So just a powerful write and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. Thank you. And Gray, how about you?
It's definitely a well-written poem. It had a beautiful flow to it. And, like Pam said, it had a depth to it. a meaningfulness to it that was raw and profound.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And you're all absolutely right. There was a nice note that consciousness, reality in the moment, the streaming of self where the interconnectivity is understood in the moment, the relativity of everything. Nicely done. And we're at the back end of things, Sam. So I just said great show. Thank you very much. Gray, thank you for joining us. Had a blast. Thank you for the reads and the comments and for sitting in with us. And
good night.
What's up? Anything to say?
Good night, everybody. Good night, Dan.
Good night, Gray.
Good night, everybody. It was fun.
Good night, gang. We'll do this again.